Hello and welcome to Spotlight on Asia on Radio France International. I'm Roslyn Hyams. Welcome this week to Edith Coron and Anne Garrigue. They've just published in French Les Nouveaux Éclaireurs de la Chine, or China's New Scouts. These pioneers, the authors call cultural hybrids. The book is an observation of a phenomenon that is part of and a consequence of China's awakening since the end of the 1970s, when Deng Xiaoping began to prise open his country. Chinese business and investment started opening up and thus became permeable to foreign influence and know-how. This is partly why China is sourcing less technology and machinery from more developed countries today. It now has its own. To reach this point, though, Chinese society has also been affected by the authorized resumption of East-West encounters, resulting in crossover Chinese or Chinese people with Western ways of being, and vice versa. Edith Coron.
The cultural hybridity, at least the way we define it, is the capacity of one person to navigate between different sets of cultural references, and in this process, transforming himself or herself. But eventually, it's also a cultural hybrid, the way we define it. It's the claiming this very complexity, claiming this very transformation and inhabiting it. These are people who are creating a new reality that even most people can't even conceive. And we explain that quite thoroughly in the book. The words don't exist, not only in China for this matter. Cultural hybridity is a very clumsy word. In a globalized 21st century, we still have to invent a word to describe a reality that we are creating. So they are scouts because they are creating a reality that other people have a hard time naming. And they're also shedding a light, a very interesting light, on China that very seldom we look at. We tend to see dichotomies, we tend to work in oppositions, you know, communism, consumerism, nationalism, cosmopolitanism, nation, civilization, etc. What cultural hybridity does, and what we have observed, is the capacity to reconcile what looks like dilemmas, these dichotomies. And we also observe that that's why the wording matters, that for these digestions to take place, it is paramount that we should be able to name it, to talk about it. But in China, it's quite hard. We operate within very constrained boundaries in terms of freedom of expression. And particularly these days, in the course of our book, we have seen a great evolution from 2008, the Olympic Games, and the big celebration of China's place in the world. And China being comfortable with in its relationship to the world. And today, where we have a very severe closure of the political space and much more antagonized relationship with the rest of the world.
Both authors have first-hand experience of living and working in Asia, and China particularly. Anne Garrigue.
The leadership has changed. Xi Jinping, I think, seeing that now China don't need the same way as the world. Deng Xiaoping opened the country in the end of the 70s because pragmatically he wanted his people to learn very quickly. So he sent many students abroad, and also he welcomed a lot of multinational companies in China. But what happened? After the Olympics, they said, we have done it, so we don't need them so much. We need them, but not so much. And they are maybe afraid that with foreigners comes a lot of change in China, and they are afraid of notions like civil society, like freedom of expression. They are afraid that it will backlash on their own country. They were afraid of what happened in Hong Kong. So there is a document called Document 9, and this is a document that is, even for us as a writer, we have been confronting this document because our books cannot be published right now in China, even if some publishing company, Sanya, wanted to publish it, because it doesn't fit in this frame, which is very, very severe. So this document 9 is closing China, and we have seen it, especially for cultural hybrids. We have seen that it has a lot of impact in some kind of cultural hybrid. The creative one, the innovator in political field or in social field, the researcher were working on human sciences, these people are blocked. But the people who are working for the market, who are working on fashion, luxury items, they can express themselves still.
You're listening to Spotlight on Asia on RFI with me, Roslyn Hyams. The authors note that 10 million Chinese passport holders live abroad and 650,000 non-Chinese have a residence permit to live in China, while 3 million mainland Chinese people have studied outside of the mainland, numbers that were unimaginable 30 years ago. Coron and Garrigue note that the authorities are working hard to preserve their notion of a Chinese society. However, Coron comments that while China may have its own particular and very clear way of dealing with the unorthodox, it's not alone in considering it's a problem.
What we find very interesting, the framework societies give to the reality they have created, and in this case, we're talking China. But China is not the only country which has a hard time digesting the very hybridity it has created for its own modernization and transformation, economic transformation. When it comes to the people it has generated, these being Chinese or foreigners, in China, it is the ultimate challenge. And this leads us at the end of the book actually to broaden it and saying, well, China actually, if we look at it, we can see it as a magnifying glass of so many of the crucial questions we could ask ourselves in a globalized 21st century. In other words, how do we deal with the cultural hybridity we are creating? The news is full of it at the moment. The boundaries between us and them, which cultural hybrids have resolved somehow, we are facing it every day with the migration crisis we have at the moment at the doors of Europe, for example. So it is very interesting to look at China from this perspective and certainly not judge from a judgmental or politically classifying point of view. We just analyze the phenomena, which is at an unprecedented scale in China because of the size of China and because of the pace of this transformation that China has experienced the last 30 years. But we find that for all of us, actually, and with a little bit of humility, which we tend not to have when we look at China, actually, there are lots of very interesting lessons to be learned in terms of what's happening in China.
A final word from the authors who curiously found that they, two French women, had written a culturally hybrid book with a special blend.
The book itself is probably a hybrid product in the sense that it was written by two people with different perspectives, different life stories, however, lots of commonalities, but we were also kind of practicing what we were preaching in the process of writing the book.
Maybe one challenge was, can we write together? And will the product be coherent in terms of writings? Because two people writing is a different style. We don't use the word necessarily the same. And honestly, even our husbands could not recognize who wrote what. So I think by chance we have the kind of the same style of writing.
Just to remind you that Les Nouveaux Éclaireurs de la Chine, already out here in France and in French, but the authors are not optimistic about seeing it on the bookshelves in mainland China, at least, anytime soon. Edith Coron.
Yeah, well, the Chinese edition in mainland is not going to happen. It's very clear now because it will not make it through censorship. We're working towards an English edition. Actually, our book at the moment is presented at the book fair, International Book Fair in Frankfurt. So we're crossing our fingers and very much hope that we'll have an English edition.
My thanks to Edith Coron and Anne Garrigue for sharing their eye-opening observations and their book, published by Les Belles Lettres, and to you for listening. From me, Roslyn Hyams, until next time, goodbye.